Good afternoon, Eastern Washington. This is Matt Shea, and welcome to Patriot Radio, broadcasting live from the capital of free Washington and the future capital of the State of Liberty, Spokane Valley, once again brought to you by the committee to elect Matt Shea Republican in the legacy of Dr. Stan Monteith, bringing you the story behind the story and the news behind the news. And once again, this is the year we make freedom a reality, not just because of the election, but in everything we're doing locally as well, because our hope is not in man, but in Jesus Christ. And we can't end in prayer. We must also move to action. And as Jeremiah 6:16 reminds us, stand at the crossroads and look, ask for the ancient paths and ask where the good way is and walk in it, and you will find rest for your souls. And really talking about, as I mentioned before, a rebirth of freedom. That's what we're talking about, a rebirth of freedom. And now from the front, your daily intelligence briefing on the international front. Once again, all the signs and signals coming out of the Trump administration, and more revealing, the signs and signals coming out of the rest of the world indicate that the Trump administration is going to draw closer to Russia and isolate China, and also that they do expect some level of civil unrest in the world. I think that is pretty clear from the many former military that are being put into the cabinet right now that he is expecting trouble. And, you know, you just look to the Middle East and you see the chaos that is over there right now, and it makes sense why trouble could be expected, because the Middle East is in flames right now, and a lot of prophetic things happening. And as I've been mentioning, you know, they had the reconstitution of the Sanhedrin. They had this group that has built the accoutrements, created the garments, everything that's needed for the inside of the temple to be rebuilt in Jerusalem. And now the United Nations is changing the Temple Mount to Muslim, or trying to anyway. But most significantly, the election of the Jewish high priest for the first time in hundreds of years. Very clear signal things are heading in a certain direction. And for those of you watching it, I'm going to continue to report on it as I get information out of Israel, because it's just fascinating to watch. I mean, this cloud, if you didn't see it, take a look at it on video. This cloud that stood on the border with Israel, it was like there was a wall there. It's amazing. You have to see the pictures of this thing. And standing between the IDF, the Israeli Defense Forces, and ISIS. And speaking of ISIS, and you are not going to hear this in U.S. media, but what you'll hear is that there's a humanitarian crisis in Aleppo. That's really what you'll hear. What you're not hearing is that Islamic State forces have pushed forward their assault to retake the central Syrian town of Palmyra, and that they had just captured a huge Russian-Syrian airbase outside of the town. And included in that, ground-to-ground missiles, anti-tank missiles, anti-air rockets, those are the things that were captured there. So there's kind of this offensive happening right now by ISIS in Syria. And again, not a lot in the, if anything, in the mainstream media about this. Also, along that same line, the Mosul offensive, this is in Iraq, has essentially stalled out. And at least reporting from Debka File indicates that the reason it stalled out is they're just waiting for Trump to come in so they can finish the job. So there is a lot happening over there in the Middle East that, again, is not being really reported. I mean, I'm kind of amazed by the it's almost a media blackout on what's happening over there. Which brings us to the national front and the media blackout of another kind. And folks, I was actually briefed on this issue here about 2.5 years ago. And this issue is the investigation into Obama's birth certificate by Sheriff Joe Arpaio. Now, the left tried to spin this as, you know, he was trying to say that Obama was born in Kenya, etc. And Joe Arpaio just came back and said, listen, I don't care where he was born. The document itself is a forgery, and that's a crime, and that's what I'm investigating. The only law enforcement agency in the country, the Maricopa County Sheriff's Office, to investigate this. Well, he came out today with his findings. And folks, I want you to pay attention to this. Because his investigators found 9 points of forgery in the document that was presented by the White House as President Obama's birth certificate. And this is kind of the bombshell part of it. Sheriff Arpaio is claiming that his investigators have in fact found the source document that was used in the digital creation of what the president is claiming is his long-form birth certificate. And this investigation says that the birth certificate that the information was taken from was belonging to Joanna Ani, and that that information was imported into this creation. And it's just, if you, just stepping back from all of the politics around this, if there is a forgery, that is a crime. And that's what Arpaio is saying here. And his investigators, I want to read this quote. This is reported WorldNet Daily. When you have two separate documents with two hand-placed stamps at the same angles, obviously a forgery has taken place, the investigator said. So they're saying that what the president of the United States showed the public is an obvious forgery, okay? It's what is being said here in this report. And I want to read this other quote that's in here as well. Quote, it is the opinion of the Maricopa County Sheriff's Office that the birth certificate belonging to Joanna Ani was in fact used as a source document in the digital creation of Barack Obama's long-term birth, sorry, not long-term, long-form birth certificate, end quote. And Arpaio says he's continuing the investigation, but I mean, this is a law enforcement agency doing a formal investigation of a forgery and concluding that it very well looks like it might be a forgery. And in fact, only one statement that it is a forgery, an obvious one. So a media blackout, obviously, on that. And you're not going to hear it anywhere else except Patriot Radio. But this, again, was done by forensic document experts, including one of the foremost document experts in the entire country that works as an expert witness for Perkins Coie out of Seattle. So these are not slouches. This is not some sort of thing made up, you know, in the woods somewhere. This is a legitimate, thorough law enforcement investigation that has concluded this. So, folks, you can share that with your friends and neighbors. Again, it's on WorldNet Daily. Also on the national front, and very interesting, this increase in something called predictive algorithms. And I mentioned this before when we brought up the topic of activity-based intelligence. Now, the intelligence communities across the world are switching to activity-based intelligence as a focus. And what that means is cataloging every website you visit, who are your friends on Facebook, who you call and contact, what you say during those calls and contacts, your browser history, everything you can conceivably think of that would define your behavior. Hence, activity-based intelligence, okay? Once they get that definition of you and your behavior, then they turn around and they will introduce stimulus to provoke a predicted response from you because they have all that other information. So when we talk about big data, folks, this is exactly where they're going with this. And Communist China actually has been doing this for years, in cataloging every single detail about a person to be able to later influence their behavior by introducing stimulus to provoke a specific reaction. So this is, I mean, this is behavioral manipulation is what we're talking about. And predictive algorithms are used all over online right now. And if you don't believe that you're being, your information is being tracked or it doesn't matter, just if you have the Firefox browser, go get the add-on self-destructing cookies, okay? And see, it's going to freak out a little bit. I'm just going to warn you because it literally will be destructing cookies every few seconds when you're browsing the web. That's how much information they are collecting on you and me. And so this brings up the obvious question, what is private anymore, and can we really keep things private? And if so, how? And it's not just governments doing this stuff. I mean, this is companies like Amazon. I mean, this is things that we use every day. And it's raising a lot of questions about how to deal with these types of things, and also a lot of questions about, you know, can that information be used to manipulate behavior? I mean, is that even legitimate? Is it ethical? Is it a place we want to go as a society? Because folks, I'm telling you, the Internet of things, literally, they want to have every single thing in your home connected to the Internet of Things. Your refrigerator, all of your appliances, and be able to integrate everything into one database. So for example, if you're eating too much ice cream out of the refrigerator and it notes that, and it's connected to your health records, the next time you're at the doctor's office, they can literally say, well, you were eating too much ice cream. I mean, literally, that is where it's going. And I've had some very uneducated, not very well-read people try to challenge that. But when you actually look at the primary source documents, you go look at the research being done, look at the statements made by former General Petraeus on the Internet of Things, and it is very clear this is where they're going. They want to control every facet and aspect of your life. So I bring it up here as something to get you thinking, because it is a little creepy, you know? It's hooked up to your appliance, knows how many cups of coffee you have in the morning. I mean, it's endless. And then that's connected to your medical record database, so that your eating habits then become part of the discussion you have with your doctor, and the doctor calls your bluff when you go in there. I got to tell you something, that's not freedom. I want to be able to have a little extra ice cream once in a while. I don't know about you. Also on the national front, again, one of my favorite headlines, GOP readies cuts to federal workforce. And let's hope they follow through with it, because less government is the entire goal of what we're doing here. Also on the national front, more appointments. Again, Rex Tillerson, Secretary of State. Sounds like John Bolton is going to be number two. I don't know if they finalized that yet, but the fact of the matter is, again, he has very close ties with some Russian oil magnates, and also very tough on Iran. So you can, again, kind of see President-elect Trump's foreign policy being shaped by who he's choosing right now. Which brings us to the Russian hacking allegation. So the Democrats lose the election and they blame it on the Russians. Well, now that whole push of hacking by the Russians is starting to fall apart. There are certain members in the intelligence community who are distancing themselves from that statement. In addition to that, you have this push by the left to say that certain things are fake news, most hilariously of which was Brian Williams, the disgraced anchor who's now on MSNBC, go figure, who embellished his reporting in danger zones around the world and saying that fake news is horrible, and yet he was kind of the center. I mean, this is where the mainstream media loses all credibility. But the fact of the matter is, on top of that, that what we're beginning to see is a crackdown, and mark my words on this, folks, a crackdown on the internet and social media. Now, Facebook, they came out, Zuckerberg came out today, said he was going to label what is and what is not news. This is very startling. Now, we have this Russian hacking thing that the mainstream media throws out there, and that looks like it might be fake news. We have this thing that they did to me the other day with the stadium gun bill. You know, Shea wants guns in stadiums, and yet it's already existing law in Washington. They didn't bother to put that in the story. So, that's another perfect example of fake news. And now you have Facebook wanting to label what is news. And all of this, I keep in mind, on top of those predictive algorithms that I mentioned earlier in the show. So we have a move toward controlling what people get as information, because once they can control that, they can control you and me. So keep your eye on this. It's a lot more dire of a situation than I think we're giving it credit. On the regional front, as I reported on Tuesday, the Kathy McMorris situation, she was beat out for the Department of Interior by Ryan Zink from Montana, who is a former Navy SEAL. I have done some investigating into that, and many people are saying that he is against transfer of land to the states, but he is, growing more fond of allowing larger timber harvests and maybe developing some mines back in some of our national forests and government-managed lands. And so it'll be interesting to see what he does for the Department of the Interior. But that means that Kathy McMorris will remain in her position in the leadership in the House of Representatives. And it really closes down everything that spun up last Friday almost instantaneously. It was interesting. Everybody was asking, what are you going to do? Are you going to run for Congress? Are you not going to run for Congress? And I really want to say thank you, take a moment real quick to say thank you to everybody that was supportive of that, and really that just tremendous outpouring of support and prayers and well wishes people sent our way. I know Victoria was very grateful for that, especially the ones that specifically acknowledged her. And I am very grateful for all of you that did that too. Thank you. Also on the regional front, once again, the Freedom Agenda team is going to be live video broadcasting from Olympia this upcoming session. And we're going to be giving you information on how to get involved on real-time basis as we go through things on the ground there and push back against the forces that would seek to impose socialism on all of us here in Washington State. Also on the regional front, real quick update on the 51st state movement. I promised a bombshell, and I'm gonna share it with you today. First of all, popular movement, 73% plus on the latest poll. That was KXLY. 8,000 plus people weighed in, 73% in favor. Again, Article 4, Section 3 of the United States Constitution spells out how to do this. And we would have a lot less bloated government over here in Eastern Washington, and therefore not need as many taxes, because we don't have as much government. And when we don't have as much government, we actually grow businesses and jobs, and we have more revenue on top. That's the way a free market works. But I had a friend of the family deliver a magazine. Now, folks, this is a 95-page magazine. I want you guys to hit your way back buttons and go all the way back to December 30th, 1984. On the front page of this magazine is a beautiful picture of what looks like Lake Roosevelt. Trees. Looks like a kind of a banister railing for a cabin. And on that railing are some postcards. One of those postcards says Columbia. And then at the top of the magazine, it says Columbia, a paradise found. Now, one of the postcards is flipped over and it says greetings from the 51st state. And folks, I want you to just pause for a moment in your minds and imagine And remember all of the horrific things that the media, especially the Socialist Review, has been saying about the 51st state and splitting Washington. Okay? Splitting Washington along the Cascade Crest. All the terrible things. Dumb idea. It'd be terrible. We don't ever want to do this. This is a crazy idea from Spokane Valley. All the conservatives in Eastern Washington are crazy hillbillies. Remember all these negative things they say about us, okay, as patriots, okay? And then I want you to relish this moment that this 95-page magazine, dozens of articles in here, in this 95-page magazine, Columbia Paradise Found, written, ladies and gentlemen, by the Spokesman Review, December 30th, 1984. And I'm going to make it a point every show to pick one of those articles to highlight because they thought it was a good idea back then. In fact, Bill Coles himself wrote in here all of the, they did a contest on some things, you know, that the state animal. Now this 51st state was Eastern Washington, North Idaho, and Western Montana. I actually kind of like that. That's a great idea. Okay, but they literally list all of the different things that if this was a 51st state, it would have. The state bird would be the osprey. The animal would be the grizzly bear. I don't know if I agree with that one so much. The flower would be the Indian paintbrush. The tree would be the tamarack. The bush, the state bush, would be the huckleberry. The nickname would be the wilderness state. And the motto would be Paradise Found. And the state name, again, would be Columbia. Now, based on our contest, the 51st state name will be Liberty. But here you go, the Socialist Review itself advocating, 95 pages advocating, why we live in one of the greatest areas in the entire world. And greetings from the 51st state, brought to you by the hypocritical, inconsistent Socialist Review. So relish that, folks, because I tell you what, I was giddy when I found that. And we're not going to let this die. This is going for the next year. Also on the regional front, we had a article in the Inlander that was alleging that our Freedom Agenda team, but yours truly specifically, was ineffective as a legislator, only got past milquetoast bills. So I want to go through a few of those milquetoast bills real quick, let you guys decide. Because, it seems like people always try to diminish things when they can't fight you based on formal logic. So just to clear the air, you remember Mr. Paul, who escaped during an outing from the state mental facility when they brought him to the Spokane County Fairgrounds? We passed a bill to prevent that from ever happening again. Milquetoast, apparently. Remember the bill that opened up hundreds and hundreds of miles of roads to ATV users, has reinvigorated the economies in some of the rural parts of Northeast Washington and North Central Washington. Apparently that was a milquetoast bill. Remember the bill that we passed to reform electronic home monitoring for the first time in 20 years after all of those abuses in the electronic home monitoring program here in Washington State, where we had these people that should have been actually, some of them probably behind bars, but one stole a Victoria Clipper, another committed a horrific crime, and we were able to reform electronic home monitoring in Washington State for the first time in 20 years. Apparently a milquetoast bill. Remember the time that we actually had a bill that signed into law that prevented the use of stingray devices warrantlessly in Washington State? We got that passed and through the legislature. Apparently a milquetoast bill. We also had the amendments, several, actually, banning the creation of Sharia courts in Washington and banning the enforcement of Sharia law in Washington State. We actually got those passed and through the legislature. Apparently those were Milk Toast bills as well. Just a few for today, just to kind of, I guess, tongue-in-cheek rebut some of the stuff that's out there and that the Inlander really says is ineffective. Perhaps it's the Inlander that is ineffective. On the local front, the North-South Freeway, discussions are moving the ball forward on that to get it restarted. And myself and Representative McCaslin have been working very, very diligently on that, and we're going to continue to do so. It is an important project for the region. We just need to get it done. And it's been stalled over this black tank issue, and we think we've found a way forward. We're working with all sides to move it forward, and we're going to continue to do that. Also on the local front, Roy Murray convicted on all charges in the triple homicide in North Spokane. And I know a lot of people breathing a sigh of relief, and a great job to the prosecutor's office on that one. There is a lot more to that story. I am not going to be talking about it right now, but there is a lot more to that story that we will be bringing out here maybe a month from now. And that's the briefing. Remember, the antidote to dependency and socialism is to be a God-fearing, self-reliant, freedom-loving American. Thank you to everybody that's been praying for the show. And make sure you go to Facebook.com/Patriot Radio US. Like the page, share it with your friends and family. And send us a note, Matt@VoteShea.com. Let us know what guests you want to hear on here as well in the next year. We're going to be having, at least for the first part of the year, the typical group of legislators on there telling you what's going on. But if you have any ideas, feel free to send them my way. And that's the briefing. All right. It is my great honor to reintroduce you to Mark Goodwin, author, Days of Noah, Days of Elijah, and one other series we're going to be talking about a little bit later in the show, and also the host of Prepper Recon Podcast. Mark, thanks for joining me on Patriot Radio today.
Matt, it's so good to be back on. Thanks for having me.
Well, how have you been? It has been a little while.
I've been good. I've been busy, cranking the books out, keeping the podcast going. So that's two full-time jobs right there. But yeah, I'm preaching to the choir because you're a busy guy too. I know you got a lot of penguins on the iceberg.
Yeah, no kidding. It's kind of amazing, but you can only do it with the grace of God
Amen.
And your family. Amen. Yeah. Well, what is your take on the election? Because I haven't had a chance to talk to you about it since the election happened. What is your take on the election and the trend, and where do you think this is all headed?
Well, you know, Trump wasn't my first choice during the primaries, but he was a lot better than the criminal that we were facing there towards the end. And I was going to ask you about that because California secedes. Would Columbia still be the 51st state, or could they just step in and fill that void?
Yeah, we could end up just being the 50th. Yeah.
And that would be so easy because pretty much everybody out there was going to leave the country anyway if Trump won. And I think it's a really good solution for everybody because there'd be no love lost here.
Well, you know, it's interesting. All these people said that, but we aren't seeing them leaving. Maybe we should start a donation campaign to, you know, buy bus tickets for all those folks, you know, celebrities down in Hollywood and stuff.
Absolutely. So they can... Venezuela, they've got great socialist.
Yeah.
It's a little rough down there right now because, in case you haven't heard, they did ban the 100 Bolivar note, and on top of an already crippled economy, people are now, they're giving away their children. One of my regular listeners sent me an article today that showed people that are actually giving away their children. Robert Amy, he sends me great stuff all the time. See them starve to death, and people are eating dogs and cats, which are pretty much extinct about at this point. And it's absolute chaos there, and people are just dying left and right. And that's where socialism takes you.
It really is the end result of socialism, and we're seeing it in real time down there. And all these people said, oh, that had never happened in the United States. Well, look at Venezuela has a huge oil-based economy. It's not like they don't have the resources to fund things down there and to have a decent government and decent infrastructure. It's just socialism collapsing on itself like it always does.
Yeah, and now back to the election. I think, like I said, I think Trump's going to be good in some ways. He's going to be much better than what the alternative was. I really like that he selected Scott Pruitt, the Oklahoma AG who sued the EPA multiple times. I like that he put him as the head of the Environmental Protection Agency. I think that's just poetic justice right there. And we need people who understand the corruption in these agencies to take them over. And I think I'd really like to see Cliven Bundy be appointed as director of the BLM. Now, that's what I'd call draining the swamp.
I think that would send the liberals into apoplexy if that occurred. Well, where do you think everything in the world is headed? It looks like Trump's cabinet picks are signaling a drawing closer to Russia and an isolation of China. Kind of, what is your perspective on where this is headed and where we're headed at in the world as at large?
Trump's got a big. If Obama thought he inherited a mess, you know, Trump's mess is much, much bigger because he's coming into office. We'll have $20 trillion in debt, which is doubled during the Obama administration. If he is able to pull us out of this tailspin, we're going to have to expect massive inflation because besides the $20 trillion in debt, Obama also doubled the money supply during his 8 years. So if we continue to see the market confidence that we've seen since the election, prices are going to really skyrocket. And I think that we'll see that in real estate, in automobiles, and food prices and everything else. So that's something, you know, hopefully he can really get the economy going. And he is a businessman, and we do need a businessman in that position. So that's one of the things I do like about him. But when we see all that confidence coming in and we've got all of this money sitting on the sidelines and it starts to flow back into the economy and it's all competing for the same amount of goods and services, prices are going to go up. And so we got to be ready for that. And that's one of the things you got to think about when you're doing your long-term planning. And especially even short-term planning over the next 4 to 8 years, I think that's something that we could really see.
So what is one of the best hedges against inflation? I mean, really, it's a hidden tax, but how do you think people can prepare for something like that? If I'm not going to say it's a certainty, but it's getting toward a certainty.
Yeah, if you drop... So a box of ammo, drop that on your foot. It hurts. If you drop a silver bar or a gold bar on your foot, it hurts. So those are good investments. Real estate, forget it. You drop a house on your foot, the foot's gone. But that's a great investment, I think, because people have to live somewhere. Farmable land, they're not making any more of that. And what there is of it, of course, Corns over at the BLM is trying to snap it up. So that's another reason I think we definitely need to get Trump to get him out of there, whether it's Cliven Bundy or whoever takes over at the BLM. We've got to get Reed's little crony out of there.
Yeah, no question about it. I mean, I really believe that they have to fire. If you really want to truly drain the swamp, drain that bureaucracy, you know, slash the budgets dramatically and fire 2 and 3 levels down. That's the only way I can see it turning around, because the bureaucrats really have institutionalized socialism.
Yeah, and we're starting to see a lot of the chickens coming home to roost around the world. We mentioned earlier about Venezuela banning the 100 Bolivar note. The same thing happened in India. They banned the 50 and 100 rupee note, which are basically about a $20 bill and a $10 bill, pretty close. And they didn't have the new currency printed in enough quantities to make up for the currency they pulled out. So it's absolutely collapsing in India. And, of course, that's a billion people we're talking about right there that are already just living on the edge. And so their economy is collapsing. Australia's voiced their intentions to take out the $100 Australian bill as well. So they're a little bit more developed nation. I think that they'll probably have better systems in place to start pushing them more towards this cashless society, which I think that we're going to continue to see more and more of. Everything you look at in the news keeps trending closer and closer to the stuff that we see in the Book of Revelations. And, you know, for the folks that are pre-trib and you think you're going to be out of here before anything bad ever happens, you know what? I hope you're right.
But it could.
But I'm prepping for a mid-trib tribulation. And I'm also keeping in mind that even if it is a pre-trib rapture, you know, there's people in the Middle East that are suffering for their faith right now. There's people in America that are suffering for their faith right now, just not to the degree that they are in Syria and Afghanistan and Saudi Arabia and China. Are being killed in China. They sell the organs of Christians that are incarcerated for life, and they'll kill them and sell the organs to people that need an extra lung or a liver or a kidney or whatever.
Well, Mark, in your books, you really bring up the issue of Christian persecution, and my response is, but it could never happen here. I mean, that's what you're gonna hear from a lot of folks out there. It would never happen here. There wouldn't be persecution in America. What is your response to that? And what do you think's coming?
Well, Coach Joe doesn't think that, and Kim Davis doesn't think that. The folks that own Sweet Cakes Bakery that were sued out of business, they don't think it. The owners of the Wedding Chapel in Idaho, they don't think that. So there's less and less people that believe that. The fact that, you know what, it's happening here. It's slow. It's not as bad as it is in the rest of the world, but it's coming, and it's coming fast. She was the Marine that had the placard on her desk that said, "No weapon formed against me shall prosper," and she was court-martialed for that. So it's happening all through our society, through our military, through our government, and it's taken over. And we may have some brief respite under Trump. We may have 4 to 8 years where we're able to take a breather, but we can't stop fighting. We've got to keep pressing on, and we've got to make the most out of whatever little freedom we do get out of this 4 to 8 years, which may not be as much as a lot of folks think. I would definitely tell people to temper your faith there as far as what faith you're putting in Trump to be any type of a savior, because we've only got one of those.
Right. I think if we keep Jesus Christ at the center of our lives, he'll stay at the center of our country, at least at the center of regions of our country. But I want to kind of get into this really quick, because there are a lot of folks out there that, you know, say don't polish the rails on a sinking ship. Don't get involved in politics. Don't do that kind of stuff. And I had one pastor that I heard say, we're not on that ship. And, you know, the idea that we're going to somehow skate and not go through any sort of hard times, I've always found a little bit reprehensible, because I think it lulls people into complacency. What is your take on all that?
Yeah, absolutely. I think that we're going to see hard times. I think we've seen hard times. I think we're going to see more of them. Even after the election, the left they're not backing down one iota. The liberal media, they're really, really pushing hard. The election and in polling much higher numbers of Democrats than Republicans, which kept Hillary 5 to 10 points all the way through the election. They're still labeling the people that came out with the facts about what she was doing, about what her campaign manager Podesta was doing, their involvement with child molesters and witchcraft and all of this just horrid, evil stuff. And that's all labeled as fake news, while these people that were lying about the poll numbers and covering all of that stuff up, that miserable, horrible stuff that was coming out, they covered all that up and lied about the poll numbers, and they're the ones that are going to be in charge of labeling who's fake news and who's real news. So they're not stepping back, not even a little bit. So we can't do that either. We've got to just keep pressing on, and we've got to keep pressing forward, and don't spend too much time basking in victory.
I think that's just phenomenal advice, and that kind of brings us now to your latest book series. Now, you wrote Days of Noah, Days of Elijah, and they were series. I read them both. I have not read your latest series, Seven Cows, Ugly and Gaunt, obvious reference to scripture there. Explain to the listeners where that came from and why you think it's important for them to read it. And I got to tell you something, you've actually been a little prophetic in some of the things that you put in your books, and it's probably scares you too when you actually read it and something happens in the news.
It does. And sometimes this stuff's happening while I'm writing it. And it is, it is a little odd sometimes. And that series, The Seven Cows, Ugly and Gaunt, is about a boy. He professes Christ. He turns his life over to Christ and immediately starts having prophetic dreams. And the dreams are similar to Pharaoh. Cows and the gaunt cows. He sees them blind, and he comes to understand through his girlfriend that also gets saved. And she gets the gift of interpretation. And so she's interpreting his dreams, and they figure out that this is a warning from God that there's an EMP coming. So they're not preppers or anything like that, and they don't have a lot of means, but they do what they can to start getting prepared right away to weather the storm that they know is coming. And through the grace of God, they're able to survive it, and they get to a remote location and inform community out there and do the necessary things to survive the chaos that comes following this EMP attack.
Well, and this is the interesting. I have this feeling out there, like, you know, we are getting a reprieve right now, but all of a sudden it's just going to be like boom. And I talk to many. I mean, actually, I don't think I have talked to someone that does not agree that an EMP is one of the greatest threats to our country right now. Can you explain to the listeners why that is and what an EMP is? Because there's a lot of, I think, misinformation out there about it. And I think a lot of times the media will poo-poo it as not really that big of a deal.
Yeah, and so most of my... been on the Prepper Recon podcast several times, and he was the nuclear strategist for the CIA. So not just the average tinfoil hat YouTuber that thinks something bad might happen to us. This is a man that's served in the intelligence community for years. He currently serves on the Congressional EMP Commission. Concerned. So it's certainly something that you should pay attention to. And one of his biggest concerns is that as we speak, North Korea has two satellites that are orbiting the Earth right now, and they're at such a place that if they had a nuclear warhead on them, that could be popped off over the East Coast and the West Coast and basically shut down the entire grid of the entire United States, some of Canada, and much of Mexico. And these satellites, which are supposed to be agricultural satellites, should be, if they're doing what the North Koreans say they're doing, they should be taking pictures of land and you know, ice caps and things like that, and mapping weather patterns, and they should be sending that data back to North Korea. Neither one of these satellites are putting out any information.
Well, that would be kind of indicative of what their real purpose is.
Not designed to send out a signal.
Well, if you could, The connection is a little rough right now, but could you mention again the scientist that you had on Prepper Recon podcast that talked about this issue as an expert?
Yeah, that was Dr. Peter Vincent Pry, and he was the nuclear strategist for the CIA, and he currently serves as the Congressional EMP Commission. He serves on that commission.
So, as chairman. So, has Congress, has the Senate, has the president been briefed on the fact these two North Korean satellites are up there and literally are not doing what they are up there if they were supposed to be agricultural satellites are doing? Have they been briefed on that? And why isn't anybody taking action if that's the case?
Yeah, absolutely. They are. And they just don't. With China, or which is sort of North Korea's big brother, and they don't want to trigger World War III. But they, they're very, very aware of it, and the commission was commissioned by Congress, the EMP commission, and there's reports on how to survive it and what could be done to harden our grid, and there's all of this information that they're all aware of. It's just that it's not. They don't see it as a priority, because it's one of those things, and I'm sure that as someone that's familiar with government as you are, you don't really get credit for preventing the fire. You get credit for putting fires out if you're in government.
Yeah, that's a really good point. If you know about this, because I'm sure you probably heard it from Dr. Pry. What can we do? First of all, what can we do to harden the grid? And secondly, does it really cost that much? And would it take that long to harden our grid against an EMP?
It costs around $2 billion to harden the entire grid of America against EMP, and which is about what we give Pakistan in foreign aid for a year. A nuclear armed country that persecutes Christians and women.
Wow. And what would that entail, hardening the grid? Because I've heard a lot of different ideas behind that, but I understand that hydroelectricity in particular is actually very EMP resistant. It's just the control mechanisms and the substations that would have to be hardened. Kind of give us an idea of what hardening actually means.
Well, a lot of it has to do with the types of circuit breakers in effect is what they are that would keep the lines that run into power plants, to keep them from acting as antennas that pick up the EMP and channel it into the actual plants. And then there's other things that can be done that can you can build Faraday cages around sensitive electronics that will shield them from electromagnetic pulses, and of course there's the threat from the sun. You know, we haven't had a Carrington class event for over 100 years. So and the last time we had one, you know, it fried the telegraph lines, but we didn't have the sophisticated types of computers and electronics and automobiles with computers that we have now. So we don't really know what that type of event would do if we were to get hit by a solar flare of that magnitude.
I think that's, you know, that part of it people don't understand. It could be man-made, but it also could be natural. And this has occurred before. This isn't something that, you know, is theoretical. It actually has occurred before. And I kind of want to shift gears just a little bit on that issue. You know, people that are our age, we kind of accept things. We've seen life. We've been, you know, in other countries, seen how the rest of the world lives, come back to America. Thank God we're Americans, and thank God that he's blessed us with such tremendous resources here. But we have another generation, the millennial generation, that just says, this is totally bunk. Things are going to continue the way they always have. What would be your message to the young people out there on issues like this, and also on your latest book series?
Well, bad things always happen, and as you mentioned, anywhere you look around the world, you can see societies that were at one time great societies and are now are in complete shambles, and we don't have to look too far back in history to see great empires that have just completely collapsed for whatever reason, and it hasn't been an EMP attack because we've never had the type of vulnerability. We've never had the technology to commit the attack, and we haven't had the vulnerability to the attack prior to now. So we've never seen anything like that before. But we've seen so many other things that have absolutely devastated entire countries. It was the 90s when the Russian economy just completely blew up, and people were starving, and they had nothing, and they went from being a superpower to being an afterthought. And that happens all the time. It happened to Rome. It happened to the Persians. It happened to the Greeks. It happened to, you could just go on and on with examples of people that thought they were completely untouchable and that nothing could ever happen to them. And it did. They got completely blindsided by something, and that was it. Their culture was toast. And most of the book of Isaiah, most of the book of Jeremiah and the minor prophets all to some degree speak to that, whether they're talking about Israel and God's judgment coming against them for their sins, or whether they're talking about Babylon or whatever culture it happens to be, that God said, you know what, your time's limited, and your day is coming, and your account's going to be reckoned, and when it does, you're not going to believe it, and it's going to just knock your socks off. And it's you're talking about a third of the Bible that's just dedicated to that type of language of, and people think, oh, well, you're getting into, so you can't say that because God judged Israel like that, He was in covenant with them, and He was never in covenant with America. So it doesn't matter whether you think America is the new Israel or any of that, because the book of Isaiah talks about God's judgment against every single known culture that was around at the time. There's a judgment against Babylon, a judgment against Put, a judgment against Cush, against Egypt, and on and on and on, against Assyria. So there's not one nation that He doesn't judge in the book of Isaiah. Nahum is dedicated to the judgment of Nineveh. So that's the Assyrians. It doesn't even talk about Israel. So many of the books of the Bible, it's not, you don't have to be a replacement theologist to think that those types of judgments are applicable. 28, where He says, you know, here are the rewards for obedience, and here are the curses for disobedience. The sky above you will be bronze. The earth beneath you will be brass. You know, your enemies will come at you from 10 directions, and, you know, you'll grow a vineyard and never drink the wine. You'll marry a wife and never have your honeymoon, basically. And, right. And it's horrible, horrible judgments in there for disobedience. And we've got the blood of 60 million children on our hands as a nation. And when you hear pastors that talk about polish, they don't want to polish the rails of a sinking ship, and they don't want to get involved into politics. That's politics right there. Those 60 million dead children, that's politics, because that's when Roe versus Wade was decided, this nation was self-identified as being Christian. Obviously, there were some very nominal Christians, just as, you know, now we're 70% Christians, and they're probably even more nominal than that 90%. But we sat back on our laurels and did nothing and allowed this for decades now. And in the 60s, when prayer, when the Bible was stripped out of the schools, we self-identified Americans 93% as Christians, and nothing changed. And here we are in 2016, the end of the Obama administration, homosexual marriage, the law of the land. You're barely allowed to speak out against it anymore. We've done nothing to roll back the murder of all these children. We've done nothing to get prayer and the Bible back in the schools, which would be the only thing that could really save this nation. That's the only way to ever make America great again, is to turn back to God. And that's not happening.
No, it's not. And it would be a huge change to the education system. We got 30 seconds left. If you could tell the folks, if they want to find out more information about you or buy some of your books, where can they go?
They go to PrepperRecon.com, and at the very top of the page, right over the blog, I've got a free, you can sign up for a free copy of the 7-Step Survival Plan, which will walk you through getting prepared for the chaos that I know is coming down the pike. So it's free, and I just want to get people prepared. And it's the 7-Step Survival Plan. It's very comprehensive, and it'll walk you through everything in an easy, bite-sized steps.
Well, Mark Goodwin, thank you very much for joining me on Patriot Radio. I want to have you back on again sooner rather than later, my friend. I really appreciate your perspective, and keep up the great work with your Prepper Recon podcast as well.
Thanks again, Matt.
All right. Mark Goodwin, PrepperRecon.com, and you can go check out his books as well, Days of Noah series, Days of Elijah series, and also his latest series, Seven Cows, Ugly and Gaunt, reference to Scripture. And the idea, too, that hard times actually are the norm. Going through hard times is the norm. It's one of the reasons they don't preach the prosperity gospel in North Korea or Siberia or China, because it wouldn't work. Because hard times, suffering, should be expected for all Christians. But it's not something that we can't prepare for. We know it's coming. And he mentioned one individual, Dr. Pry. I'm going to try to get him on the show. I've been talking about his work for a while, but I think it would be good for everybody to hear it from literally the horse's mouth about the threat to our country by EMPs. But anyway, Mark Goodwin doing a great job out there, spreading the word, preparing Christians, and getting past this idea that things will continue the way they always have. Well, if that's the case, the way they always have been is there's been hard times, and we need to be ready for it. Well, this is Matt Shea. Thank you once again for joining me on Patriot Radio today. Remember to do everything that you can to defend freedom locally. May God bless all of you. And truly, when I say that, may we bless God by our own actions as well. And may He make this generation the greatest one.